All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to a brand new episode of Artsy Fartsy Immigrants. This is the special 2026 Oscars edition. We will be getting into lots of different things, but the majority of this episode will be about my opinions on the Best Picture nominees for the 2026 Academy Awards, hosted once again by my hero, Conan O'Brien. Let's get into it. Okay. So as longtime listeners will know, last year, Conan O'Brien hosted the Academy Awards, and that was an extra special event for me in particular because I have a very close friend who was there. My friend Moritz Binder, along with the director of the film, Tim Fehlbaum, and co-writer Alex David, were all Academy Award nominated for the film September 5. Which I had really fun jobs on, working behind the scenes with the script a little bit, just, you know, small things, but which led mainly into a job as a background extra. And I just cannot believe that I had such a luxury working on that and to have the privilege and the honor of having a talented, wonderful friend actually be present in West Hollywood. I believe it was at the Adobe Theater, Dolby, at the Dolby Theater, not Adobe, not the editing software, at the Dolby Theater, which I think is also right across the street pretty much from where Jimmy Kimmel shoots his late night show, besides the point. But what's really cool about that, and this is just a little anecdote, is that Moritz, a very close friend of mine, who was the, you know, person who got me the job on his wonderful film to begin with, is also an enormous fan of Conan O'Brien. So whenever there's like new interviews or interesting podcast clips or pieces of social media that involve Conan, I always send them to Moritz when I think of it, like when I get the chance to do it. And what's so fun was I remember last year when the Oscars were going on live TV, right? I was on a vacation, a little short one in the South, or no, it was in Austria. I was in this skiing wellness hotel area. And oh, side note, I think I might be losing my voice. I think I might be getting a little sick. I don't feel sick in my head, but I can hear it in my voice. So excuse the raspiness, and occasionally I will take some sips of water to try and ease it down. But anyway, I was at this hotel and I signed up for one of these international live stream websites, basically. It was all legal. I signed up for a free trial for 7 days, but canceled it. I put an alarm and canceled it within like 48 hours or something. And funny enough, I was dog sick. I remember being in this hotel in a bed. It was, I guess, 2 a.m. or something when it started. And I watched the entire live stream of the Oscars from the moment it started until Amy Poehler listed off the nominees for Best Original Screenplay. Yes, Best Original Screenplay, yeah. And once that category finished, I closed the laptop, went to sleep. And the funny thing was, throughout all of that, I had the highest fever I think I've ever had in my life. I'm trying to think of it in Fahrenheit. Let me put it into Google really quick, just so I can, so everyone who listens, American or otherwise, will know. I think I had, I had a fever that was touching on like 102, 103 Fahrenheit. So about, you know, just around 40 degrees Celsius fever, like very, very dangerously sick. And on that trip, I ended up having two fevers actually, which is crazy. Just my body rejecting skiers and ski culture, evidently. Anyway, last year I had a very personal investment in the Oscars, not only because my friend was nominated And I was so proud and so, you know, locked in terms of, oh, maybe, you know, who knows what's going to happen here. But also because Conan O'Brien was hosting, and it was, it meant a lot to me. I think he's incredible. I'm so glad they brought him back. He's such an idol of mine. He's such a positive, heartfelt, just genuine person. And for that to be the host the year that my friend is nominated, just, I mean, it's serendipitous, right? I mean, it's just like kismet. It's unbelievable. Now we are here in 2026. Just as a side note, the other nominees for last year, for that category specifically, were Anora by Sean Baker, The Brutalist from Brady Corbett or Corbett and Mona Fastfold, A Real Pain, Jesse Eisenberg, September 5, obviously, and The Substance by Coralie Fargo. It sounds bad. It looks like Coralie Farget. It looks terrible. But I believe A Real Pain won, I think, which, you know, at the end of the day, of all those nominees, if it's not going to be September 5, if it's A Real Pain, that's a great movie. You know, it's like, it'd be like if I was up against, like for a stand-up comedy or content creator competition thing like this, some award show, and me losing the award to, this is ridiculous, this would never happen, but like, you know, losing the category to like John Mulaney or, you know, to Ali Wong, or I'm trying to think of, on the spot now, I'm like, what other comics do I love? I love lots of stand-up comics. Basically, yeah, or like, you know, Shane Gillis or Andrew Santino. Anyway, whatever. It'd be like losing to someone that I respect a lot. So the fact that they didn't win, I wanted them to win, but it going to A Real Pain, I was like, well, you know what? At least they lost to something that I really, really like. Because if they had lost to, I mean, as we know, listeners of this, if they lost to The Substance, I would have lost my mind. Okay, this is off topic. So anyway, we're going to get into some fun stuff this episode. We are looking at the 2026 Best Picture nominees. Now, this won't be a long, drawn-out breakdown of every single movie because, funny enough, there will be some very controversial opinions, as usual. I felt like I was the only person on planet Earth who didn't like The Substance. And it's one of those things where, you know, I felt that the more I expressed in full detail, with nuance, with a history of education in film, why I didn't like The Substance, the more people were just like, yeah, man, but you just, like, didn't get it, dude. You're just, like, you're a misogynist. I was like, no, I was really clear about why. There's going to be some experiences like that in this. But this won't be as long and drawn out as last year's, because this is an episode where I did not, or this is a year where I have not seen every film by far. This might be my least viewed Academy Award nomination episode ever. Isn't that wild? Like, there's some films that came out that I didn't hear about for so long. I tried to watch some. I'm going to get into it. Hold on. Okay. So let's just jump right in. I think, you know, one of the main front runners for the Best Picture nomination is, I'm going to start with the films I have seen. Okay. And I do think that the one that I've seen twice in the cinema and that I do think is a front runner is One Battle After Another. Now, I don't know if you guys have seen it. If you got a chance to see it in a proper cinema, then lucky you. I'm so glad I got to do that. I got to see it once with Ify and once with my good friend Robbie. And both experiences were just so absolutely, from the first frame to the last, just a full enjoyment, engagement, like laugh out loud moments, like genuinely laugh out loud moments, perfect tension. I love the music. People have some complaints about the music. I understand it's not for everybody. It's a bit obscure. It's a bit like dissonant and stressful, But I think it fits it perfectly. Oh, that actually reminds me of one little controversial. I'm going to put that as a side note. Controversial thing for a different movie. But anyway, one battle after another. So one of, if not perhaps the best current living American filmmaker today, generationally defining, like groundbreakingly special, different filmmaker, Paul Thomas Anderson. For those who are not like film geeks, he's made like, There Will Be Blood, The Master, Boogie Nights, Magnolia, Punch Drunk Love, plenty of others. Inherent Vice, which I didn't like, but still. He's made so many movies. This was a really different angle for him. It's 2 hours and 42. Wow. That's the cool thing, too, is I didn't even feel that. There's a lot of movies I see that are like over 2.5 hours, and it feels like it. This did not feel like that to me. Seeing it twice, I just thoroughly enjoyed it from top to bottom. I think it's every nomination. I don't know how many nominations it has. I'm trying to look for it here, but I don't quite see it. I'm probably looking at the wrong thing. But what I really love about One Battle After Another is literally every single thing, right? It's a really unique voice. Paul Thomas Anderson, I think, yeah, like I was saying, is maybe the most interesting like current filmmaker. This is just my opinion. This is not gospel. You can disagree, and you should. If you don't agree, please voice it. This is art. Everyone should have their own opinion. This is my opinion. When it's announced that there is a new Paul Thomas Anderson, I am chomping at the bit to go see what it is. And I don't think every movie he's made is equally as good as the other. Like I was saying, Inherent Vice is, for me, a very bad movie. I don't enjoy it at all. But, things like The Master or There Will Be Blood and Boogie Nights. People go crazy for Magnolia. Look, it's a masterpiece. It's got a pacing issue that bothers me, but again, it's not a bad movie. It's a great movie. It's just not something I would just put on because I wanted to watch something great. So that's not my favorite movie. But there's something about his voice, his unique approach to things that just stands out to me. It's a language, it's a cinema language that, when I think about these filmmakers, these auteurs that when they are at the helm of creating a film, whether or not they've written it or not, there's going to be sort of a cinematic language that's identifiable to them. And he's the defining voice for me in terms of like, that's a Paul Thomas Anderson movie. And the funny thing is, they're so different. Boogie Nights is nothing like The Master, but it's exactly because of that. It would be like, when I think of like Greta Gerwig, I go, oh, boom, Frances Ha. I think of Little Women. Barbie was a big leap. That was a big change for her. But I think about like, oh, I can feel that, or like, like with Alexander Payne, there's like The Descendants, this great George Clooney movie. It's beautiful. It's heartfelt. It's sad, but it's funny, and he directed The Holdovers, which was one of my favorite movies, I think, ever. I have several posters of The Holdovers in my home, and I'm looking currently at a poster of The Master with Joaquin Phoenix here. And I have a Real Payne here poster. I have September 5 posters. So like there are certain voices that just stand out to me. And Paul Thomas Anderson, if you're in the film world, that is a voice that just resonates. I think Sofia Coppola also has this voice. Even though I dislike this person so much, Lars von Trier has this kind of voice. Werner Herzog has this kind of voice, literally, because he narrates everything. But I also even think that Ryan Coogler, which we'll get into Sinners soon, but I think he also, despite the opinions I will get into about Sinners, I do think also that he is a really interesting voice for the kind of movies he's trying to make or that he wants to make. So all that aside, I'm not seeing a list of everything it's nominated for. It's nominated for quite a handful of things, but I would just basically break it down in the simplest way possible. First off, I love Leonardo DiCaprio. You know, I liked, for someone like him, I need to, like, I like his advocacy for climate change, but I also don't like that he's just kind of a stunted, you know, 50-year-old man who, like, only dates 22-year-old models and stuff like that. But, you know, like, what? Who gives a shit, right? I mean, that's his private life. That's what I'm saying. Like, you really, except for when it comes to people like Woody Allen or Harvey Weinstein, you have to kind of separate that stuff, because I don't really care what he does. He's not doing anything illegal. Well, I mean, he's not doing anything illegal with other, you know what I mean? He's not doing Kevin Spacey, Weinstein, Bill Cosby stuff. So I don't care. As long as everyone he's messing around with is at least over 20, then fine, whatever. This is so off topic. What I'm trying to say is I like to separate all of that from him as an actor. Him as an actor, right? One of my favorite actors ever. Like, I don't, there might not be a Leo film that I have not seen. I'm trying to think if there is. I mean, there's like this weird black and white one, I think from like the late 90s that they tried to scrap. I don't know. Okay. Anyway, let's start over. Okay. Jesus, Jordan, you're on ADHD medication. Shouldn't it be working? It should be working. Now it's working. Let's lock in. Leo, one of my favorite actors, right? Let's talk about who these people are on screen. Leo is one of my favorite actors. I will always watch something that he's in. Of course, Titanic. I've watched it 1,000 times. I love Titanic. The Departed. Oh my God. So great. I'm not a huge fan of Inception. Oh, Nolan fans, don't come knocking on my door. I know the Nolanites are pretty, pretty crazy. But I like him in that movie. He's great in that movie. I love, you know, The Revenant here. He definitely deserved that Oscar. Basketball Diaries, you know, oh my God. Oh, even like Blood Diamond or, what was after The Departed? There was another one that it was so, I mean, even Don't Look Up, the Adam McKay film from Netflix, you know, topical, social, satirical commentary. He did a great job, and he played a different version that usually you see like a very confident, sexy Leo, and that was a cool change of pace for him. And that's also a similar thing that I'm getting from One Battle. So Leo is an actor I will always adore. My final take on his performance in this movie is that I don't think it was his best performance. Maybe he commits, right? So Leo, he does a great job at whatever he tries to do. He does a great job. He's a great Bob Ferguson. He's great in the movie. And I should rephrase that. He's so good at what he does. He commits 110%. Part of me almost wants to see a different actor in this role. It's really hard to put into words why I feel that way. Like, you know, behind the scenes in movies, there's so much decision making that is never brought to the public eye. You know, clearly PTA and Leo have wanted to work together for a long time. You know, Leo works with the absolute best directors ever. Oh, Catch Me If You Can. That's another one. Yeah. So like, you know, he's worked with Spielberg and Scorsese and Tarantino, like Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. And, you know, he's working with all of the greats, which is a wonderful luxury that he has. And I get that desire. And, you know, people come to him with projects, you know, since he was like 25. I wonder if there might have been a better choice for that role. At the end of the day, though, that's such a mild complaint, right? Because he's great in it, and he's so funny. He's so funny. And it's a great sort of twist of the action tropes. Like, he kind of fails at everything. He's always a step behind. He never saves the day. But his motivations are pure, you know? And so, you know, I I would, like, now that it's made, I would never change it. I would never change it. It is what it is, and I would never change it. And I, the moment he is on a screen, for one frame, I am locked in. I am so, like, I cannot take my eyes off of Leo DiCaprio. Like, I love this guy. Like, I just, he's just, he's my, like, the same way people felt in the 70s and 80s and 90s about, like, De Niro or Pacino, you know, or, you know, young Brad Pitt or something, not in terms of looks, but just like captivating, just like, boom. It's like when you watch The Dark Knight and you're like, oh my God, Heath Ledger. Whoa. Like, he's there. Like, he's in, you're in it. I'm in it. I love him. I do wonder if it would have maybe had a different impact with a different actor there. But now that it is what it is, I would never change it. So yes, I think whatever one battle after another gets, and I'm thinking it will probably get Best Picture, I do think it deserves it. Shout out to, you know, Chase Infinity, who, funny enough, she plays the daughter. I think she's playing like a 17-year-old, something like that. In real life, she's 25, which, Leo never dates older than, and he plays her dad. That's funny. Also, so wonderful to see Sean Penn on screen again. All of his choices, big, bold, brash, perfect. Love it. Love it, love it, love it so much. Regina Hall, amazing actress. So glad to see her in a role like this. Teyana Taylor, perfectly, like, she's a badass, and then she's so perfectly hateable. She's so well cast, because her name is Perfidia, and I just hate her so much. But she does bad things, and so she does bad things in a good way. And of course, the man of the hour, Sergio San Carlos, Benicio del Toro. Love that man. He could literally go onto a screen with a beer belly and just fart. And I'd be like, man, Benicio del Toro is so awesome. Okay, I've spent 20 minutes on this movie. Okay, so that's my big sort of, like, yes, I know people have mixed feelings about one battle. Every opinion is valid. People don't like Paul Thomas Anderson, or they think this movie's, you know, flips of tropes, like how the hero is not really a hero, and how there's no big sort of like final battle that you would see in like a Mission Impossible movie. Instead, it's this like meditative sort of drive over rolling hills. For me, that is great filmmaking, and it's different, and it worked. Bold choices, you know, no risk, no reward. Swing big. So I love it. Okay, moving on. I'm trying to think of what else I saw here. So I saw, I stopped F1 about 30 minutes in. So it's not even fair for me to give an opinion on. You know, I don't get why F1 is in a Best Picture nomination. It's Jerry Bruckheimer, it's Brad Pitt. Like, for me, F1 is one of the most by the book, like, I feel like the plot, generally speaking, is something that like a freshman in film school could come up with. All right, so you have this like legendary driver, right? And he's kind of getting old, and he's kind of retired, but like looking for some purpose. And then these rich guys, they're like, yo, we gotta bring the old dog back in. I always think of like The Godfather. Isn't it part 3 or something where he's like, every time I get out, every time I crawl out, they pull me back in. You know, it's so tropey. It's so cliche. I don't know. And, you know, Brad Pitt's like, you know, he's just this 60-year-old guy who's like racing with 25-year-old F1 drivers in the most prestigious racing corporation on the globe, and you know, just does pull-ups in his camper van and eats peanut butter sandwiches, and we're like, yeah, sure, that's how that works. And then goes and, like, you know, drives with you know, Porsche and what's the other, the big one, anyway, whatever, it doesn't matter, rich people doing rich people stuff. Old guy gets brought out of retirement to go, you know, drive fast cars. And sure, should it get nominated for some special effects? Absolutely. Did you know that every single scene of him driving is CGI? That everything around him is fake? You probably didn't know that. Shout out to Corridor Crew, a great YouTube channel that focuses only on VFX, and they broke all that down, and it's really fascinating. So yeah, sound design, special effects, 100%. Yeah, great. That's really, it looks great. Could not be a more boring plot. Stopped it after 30 minutes, was like, I can't finish this. I don't care. If I don't care, you know, it's also, let me just break this down too, because I sound so pretentious right now, and I'm not trying to. If it doesn't mean that like every single movie has to break the traditional, three arc structure, and like, you know, and that every film has to have a midpoint, everything has to be like perfectly original. You know, it's not as if like they can't have like the basics, but they have, but still you have to have someone to care about. That's the number one thing. You have to, if you're following a character, you have to care about the character. And I met Brad Pitt and I was like, okay, so he's a living legend who's like kind of broke, but he's got a six pack and a full head of hair. And he's like a heartthrob. He's like this heartthrob guy who's a living legend. And then like some guy with money comes over and he's like, we really need you to get back in the race. And it's like, wouldn't it have been so much more interesting if like the Brad Pitt character was like such a washout now? If it was like some Paul Giamatti guy who like in his youth looked like Brad Pitt did in the 90s, but now is like, I can't do it. And like maybe he goes over and like, you know, coaches a young guy and they don't get along. And it becomes like a found family thing. I'm basically, that's basically the plot to Holdovers. But, you know, I could just imagine it could have been handled a bit more uniquely with a bit more emotional depth. But it's just like, all right, you old dog, you got one more drive in you. And I'm like, I've seen that movie so many times. So I stopped it. Next up, The Secret Agent. So I want to see this movie, but I haven't. So there's not much I can say. I love, what's his name? Wagner, the actor. Man, he's up. He's so great. Wagner Moura. I think Americans would say Wagner. Wagner Moura. But like Wagner. Wagner Moura, the Germans would say. Wagner Moura, just one of the most interesting actors working today, I think. The film is... you know, mixed language, which is not even at all a turnoff for me. It's more just informational. But it is a thought-provoking political thriller that deliberately revisits a defining moment in Brazilian history. So, yeah, historical political thriller. And it's like in Portuguese and... is any of it in English? I'm not sure. I think it's split. I don't know. It says languages Portuguese and German, so maybe none of it's in English. But I... didn't hear anything about it until it was nominated. It does seem to be, it is the, no, sentimental value also is a foreign language. It's mixed language. Okay, so I was going to say it kind of almost feels like they tacked on something with a great lead to, it's a bad take. I'm going to cut myself off there. It could be a really amazing movie. I was going to make a bad take. I'm not informed enough to make a take like that, so I'm not going to make it. So I retract all of that, stepping it down. Shouldn't have gone that direction. I was going to make a really bad suggestion, but the thing is, it could be amazing. And the thing is, I love that actor. I really love Wagner Moura. So maybe it's incredible. So I want to see it. Moving on to sentimental value. I have not seen this movie. I told you it's going to be a really funny episode because there's a lot that I have not seen. Cast-wise, look... Stellan Skarsgård, incredible actor. You know, he's getting towards the end of his life here, I believe. He's getting quite old. Is he like in his 80s now? 74. Okay, 74. I've heard amazing reviews. I've seen the trailer of this. Efi saw it in the cinema and said she really liked it, but it didn't come off like, oh my God, I loved it. It was more like, I liked it. I really liked it. Nothing to complain about, but it didn't seem like she, you know, came in screaming about it the same way that we did with One Battle. Elle Fanning, great actress. Renata Reinsve. Nora, yeah, she's a great actress from, what's the movie, her breakout movie was, The Worst Person in the World? The Worst Person in the World, yeah. Oh, she was also in Presumed Innocent. I didn't catch that. That Apple TV show with my boy Peter Sarsgaard and Jake Gyllenhaal. I didn't catch that she was in that. Funny. I didn't realize that was the same actress. Anyway, it is a Norwegian 2025 drama film directed by Joachim Trier, who co-wrote it with Eskil Vogt. Sisters Nora and Agnes reunite with their estranged father Gustav, a once-renowned director who offers Nora a role in what he hopes will be his comeback film. Nora turns it down, but soon discovers he's given the part to an eager young Hollywood star. The two siblings must now navigate a complicated relationship with Gustav while dealing with an American actress dropped right into the middle of their complex family dynamics. I'm guessing that's Elle Fanning. Yeah, the trailer looks great, and the reviews look great. So, you know, haven't seen it, but who knows? Maybe it's wunderbar. It's so funny. There's only two more that I have seen, and there's four more that I... Well, no, that's not true. There's three I have seen, three I have not. So I'm going to knock out the three that I have not, so I can just get into the sauce of the others. Yeah. Let's see here. Look, I'm going to be honest. I did not have an enormous interest in watching a 2-hour, 30-minute Frankenstein movie where the monster... Frankenstein's monster is played by Jacob Elordi. Are, as the kids would say, are we being dead ass right now? Like dead ass serious? I just don't care. I'm so sorry. It sounds awful, right? I mean, so many people put so much time, work, effort, love, stress, you know, like everybody, like, you know, there's great, great actors here, man. Even some Germans like Felix Kammerer. It sounds like camera. Felix Camera. And Charles Dance, you know, Game of Thrones, get Christoph Waltz. Christoph Waltz. Oh, love him. Oscar Isaac, legendary. Mia Goth, she's pretty. I can't say there's been a movie of hers I've loved. Sounds awful. Mia Goth, cool person. Can't stand a single movie she's been in. It's crazy, right? Let me look at Mia Goth real quick. She's 32. She's married to Shia LaBeouf. What the hell? What the hell? But like, you know, there's like the Pearl trilogy, like X and Maxine with three X's and Pearl. Don't care. Don't like him. Gave one of them a shot. Didn't like it. Nymphomania Volume 1, Lars von Trier. Very skippable. Nymphomaniac. I mean, very. I saw the first one in the cinema, and my friend Vivi gets like vertigo and nausea from handheld camera, and that's all because of like, I mean, film geeks will know like the dogma rules, but that's all that Lars von Trier uses is like very shaky handheld camera. And it's just a dumb movie. It's just like, tell him, it's like, you know, a woman, like, tell him, like Stellan Skarsgård, this old guy, you know, he's just like, he meets Charlotte Gainsbourg and he's like, tell me the story of whatever, whatever. And she's like, well, I met this guy and I banged him. And then I met this people and then I banged them. And then I met these people and I banged them. And at the end of the movie, he's like, no way. Let's bang. That's just so stupid. I don't know. It's a bad movie. I don't know how you guys feel about that if you've seen it. Then she did Infinity Pool with, that was a Cronenberg, right? Yeah, Brandon Cronenberg. That's funny enough, she did that one with Alexander Skarsgård, which is Stellan's son. And yeah, I will not be watching that either. It's gonna certainly be a very gross movie of blood and gore. I mean, she's gonna be, you know, there's hope for her. She's gonna be in The Odyssey, the new Nolan movie. I'm sure that's gonna be amazing. And she was in Suspiria from 2018 with Dakota Johnson. And that is, for what it is, for the style that it is, for what that movie is, it's a good movie. So, okay, she might be, it might be great to see her in The Odyssey. I did like Suspiria, although I cannot remember her being in that movie. And I do think she's very beautiful, and she's a very beautiful woman. But there's not a movie that she's in that I'm like, I can't wait to go see that new Mia Goth. But that's not her fault, you know? She gets the roles. She's like Shelley Duvall, you know? It's like, She's got that Shelley Duvall vibe. It's like, yeah, I loved you in The Shining. And I guess Popeye? And that's kind of it. Anyway, so Frankenstein. Look, Guillermo del Toro, great reputation in Hollywood. Love the guy. You know, he's made movies I love. I love Pan's Labyrinth. I've watched it so many times. If you've never seen Pan's Labyrinth from 2006, great movie. He got enormous worldwide acclaim for The Shape of Water, 2017. Weird movie. I love Michael Shannon in that movie, but I'm probably not going to rewatch The Shape of Water. Hellboy, 2004. Hell yeah. He did a movie in 2021 that I did not see, nor did I even see any marketing for it, called Nightmare Alley, with huge actors. So that must have not been, I don't know. He also did a Pinocchio in 2022. Guys all over the place. The man loves him some sci-fi and fantasy. You got Frankenstein, you got Pan's Labyrinth, you got a fish man having sex with a woman in Shape of Water, you got Pinocchio, Pacific Rim, Hellboy, which might be one of his best works, if not his best work. And then, you know, I don't know, it's all over the place, this guy. But look, he's a talented man. He's got a great reputation. He reminds me a lot of Peter Jackson, like how sweet he is. People just adore him. So, you know, I'm so happy he got such like an incredibly, you know, prolific and, you know, healthy career. His work has been characterized by a strong connection to fairy tales, gothicism, horror, often blending genres with an effort to infuse visual or poetic beauty. So Pan's Labyrinth is my favorite. I would say Pan's Labyrinth and Hellboy. You can stop there. Nothing else interests me at all. And I'm sorry, guys. It's just my opinion. So Frankenstein, you know, he comes out with this great cast, but I just like Jacob Elordi as the monster. It's like, give me a break, dude. You know who we should cast? You know, let's not cast a type like Philip Seymour Hoffman or, Paul Walter Hauser or who's the guy who played the Mountain on Game of Thrones, or the Hound? Ooh, that would be that. The guy who played the Hound on Game of Thrones would have been perfect, but they're like, let's get heartthrob Jacob Elordi, who just played Elvis in the Priscilla movie. Anyway, I know I won't like this. I know I won't. So I will not be watching it. Sorry, guys. Bad review. Next up, Marty Supreme. It is a movie I am dying to see, and I've just sadly not been able to see it. How is every movie 2.5 hours or more? Good Lord. Good Lord. Every single movie is 2.5 hours and up. Wow, I've not seen one movie under 2.5 hours yet. I mean, I'm not even going to spend that much time on this one. You know, the Safdie brothers. Well, it's Josh Safdie. This is, so for those who might not know, just briefly, the Safdie brothers made some incredible movies together. One of the most popular ones was Uncut Gems with Adam Sandler. Now they've kind of went off to make their own individual projects. And the first one for Josh Safdie was Marty Supreme, which Timothée Chalamet, has been, you know, religiously campaigning for so, you know, he wants that best actor win. Which, side note, just to ruin the illusion a little bit here, it's not just for prestige, but if you win an Academy Award, you can immediately charge like 9 million more for each contractual film agreement. So it's also about money. But I love me some Chalamet. And, you know, Gwyneth Paltrow's in there with her new face. I just can't take her seriously anymore. Fran Drescher, that's funny. She had style, she was there. She came, the nanny. Then there's Tyler, the Creator, Odessa Azion. Kevin O'Leary's in there. It's weird. Weird cast, but cool. Yeah. Really want to see it. I love... I was going to finish. Yeah, Josh Safdie did this, and I think it's Ben. Ben Safdie did The Smashing Machine, the one with The Rock where he's the wrestler. I saw that. I saw The Smashing Machine because I like Ben Safdie too. People glaze Josh Safdie like crazy. I mean, understandably so. But I think Ben Like, Ben's a great creative mind. I think his best individual work is The Curse, this TV show with Emma Stone and Nathan Fielder. The Smashing Machine was boring. Sorry. It was. It just was. It was boring. It was, like, sweet, and then you're, like, sad, and then it's kind of sweet, and it's kind of sad, and you're like, what am I? It's like a documentary. It's like there's no structure to it, but hopefully Marty is better, and I love me some Timmy. I love me some Safdies, but I haven't seen it, so moving on. Final one that I have not seen, and this will be the one that I spend the least amount of time on. And oh, hey, look, it's the first one that I see that's under 2.5 hours. Train Dreams. Joel Edgerton. It's an American period drama film directed by Clint Bentley, who co-wrote the screenplay with Greg Quaidar, based on a 2011 novella by Dennis Johnson. It's the film recounts the 80 years of the life of Robert Granier around Bonner's Ferry, Idaho. So he takes a railroad construction job for the Spokane International Railway, witnesses a Chinese worker thrown from a bridge by a group of white workers for unclear reasons, gives him haunting visions of a man being struck by a train, takes up seasonal logging work, meets many men who leave impressions on him, but he also witnesses more tragedies along the way. So basically, it's like a really sad period piece of a man who witnesses like death and tragedy while building railways and like logging lumber in the, I'm guessing, 1800s? Train Dreams has been compared to the work of Terrence Malick. Okay, that should give you, for film geeks, that should give you a pretty good sign. I do love me some Terrence Malick, though. It just depends on the movie. I'm not really seeing like a, it says period piece, but I'm not really seeing what year. So, okay, wait. The narrator recounts that I'm not going to spoil things, but like the narrator recounts that something happens in November 1968. So if 68 is when it ends, so, you know, the 1968 minus 80 years, you guys do the math. So yeah, that's it. Train Dreams. Okay, boom. So it's a logging, sad logging movie. All right, here we go. So the ones that I have seen, and this is you guys are gonna, I feel like I'm in danger for these upcoming reviews here, so bear with me, here we go. And I know if my friend Moritz is listening, I know exactly what he's about to say. Here comes up for Best Picture, which I will admit, I'm going to put this out there before I say the name of this movie. And Moritz, you already know what I'm going to say. I like this movie a lot, but I do not think it should be nominated for Best Picture, okay? This should not be nominated for Best Picture. It doesn't fit at all. It's like F1 in a completely different reasons, but like it does not belong here. I also don't think that Frankenstein belongs there. But anyway, here we go. The movie is the brand new black comedy thriller film directed by Yorgos Lanthimos. It is the, dark comedy thriller Bugonia with Emma Stone and Jesse Plemons. So I am an enormous Yorgos Lanthimos fan. The only film of his that I have not seen because I have a really strong gut instinct it will be bad is Kinds of Kindness. I'm almost refusing to watch it because I know it's not going to be good. I just get that vibe. I don't know. There's like an instinct sometimes. You know what I mean? Like you look at a trailer or a poster or a picture or a clip or a review and you're like, oh, that's going to be bad. Of course, you should always make your own opinions and eventually I will watch it. But like they released Kinds of Kindness like the trailers came out for Kinds of Kindness when they were doing the Oscar press tour for Poor Things. And I was like, this feels rushed. And it was. They were editing Poor Things while filming Kinds of Kindness. And I was like, why? Why? It's so weird. It feels like they added like a DLC to a video game. It's so strange. But anyway, eventually I'll watch that. But otherwise, I mean, The Favorite, The Lobster, Poor Things, Dogtooth, There's so many great movies that I love by Yorgos Lanthimos. And this is an occasionally divisive conversation between me and certain friends, Moritz. But I also respect that he doesn't like him. That's okay. I loved Poor Things. He hates Poor Things. That's what cinema's all about, baby. So, all good. I liked Bugonia. I have a Bugonia poster in my studio. I'm looking at you right now, Emma Stone. But I love Jesse Plemons. I think it's really, really interestingly shot. I think the general plot, up until the ending, I like the ending more and more, but it's like, it makes it so goofy that it's like, it kind of ruins the tension, in my opinion. I'm not going to, like, it's hard. I don't want to spoil things, like, in case people do get the interest to watch it. It's, I do think, for the majority of the movie, it's a really cool, dark comedy thriller with this sort of mystery that really pushes you, I think, in terms of, like, well, you know, like, the front part of your brain is like, well, I believe that, or like, oh, that seems suspicious, or like, oh, but that felt like a lie. And in the back of your head, you're like, well, what would be the easiest answer? Maybe he wouldn't do the easiest answer, because if he did the easiest answer, that would mean this, and that would be, but if he did, like a not obvious answer, then that would kind of, you know, so it does play, I think it's fun. I think it's a really fun thing. He didn't write it, just to be fair. It's written by Will Tracy, just for, Moritz's peace of mind. He didn't write it. He just directed it. But it's, I absolutely just adore how this film looks on camera. I've never seen anything like it. It reminds me of the vibe of Poor Things in the sense of, like, I've just never seen on film something that looks like this, you know? And for better or for worse. So people won't like that. But I just can't, I don't know. It stuck with me. And the more that I thought about it afterwards, the more that I liked it. And Efi also didn't like it, you know? I mean, she didn't hate it, but she didn't, you know, sit on it and go, like, this is garbage. It was just like, the ending, yes, yeah, sure, yeah, yeah, yeah. There's conversations to be had there. Absolutely understandable. But, you know, like I always say, opinions are meant to be had. It's good if not everyone agrees on everything. I really liked Bugonia, but I don't think that it belongs in the best picture list. And last but not least is Hamnet. So, the director of Hamnet is, wait, oh, test alert for Bayern. There is, oh, it's so crazy. I just got an alarm on my phone that said, extreme danger. And then it said, test alert for Bayern. Test alert for Bayern. There is no danger. Whoa, that's crazy.
Extreme danger.
Oh man, my sick voice is so dark, huh?
Extreme danger.
Yeah, anyway, no danger, I guess. Why don't they just start with test? Why would they start off the notification says,
extreme danger.
And then you have to read for it to go, there's no danger. I was just joking. I was just joshing around. Why wouldn't they not just be like, test, 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 no danger, test. Anyway, Germans like to keep you on your toes. Last but not least is Hamnet, a 2025 historical drama film directed by Chloe Zhao, who co-wrote the screenplay with Maggie O'Farrell, based on the 2020 novel by O'Farrell. So, produced by Sam Mendes and Steven Spielberg, Nicholas Gonda, Liza Marshall, Pippa Harris. Look, oh, this is also under 2.5 hours, to be fair. It's 2 hours 5. It feels like 8 hours. Just being honest, baby, it feels like it's 10 hours long. I stopped watching it. So this movie, here's the plot.
William Shakespeare and his wife, Agnes, celebrate the birth of their son, Hamnet. However, when tragedy strikes and Hamnet dies at a young age, it inspires Shakespeare to write his timeless masterpiece, Hamlet.
The very first frame of the movie is a quote from some mysterious source, because there's no, like, place where it was written. It just has words. And he goes, the names Hamnet and Hamlet are interchangeable. And it's like, okay, So was Booger and Gunk, I guess. Like, what are you telling me here? Okay, that might be too harsh. Look, so I like a good artsy film that pushes, like, a viewer's... that pushes the viewer, right? So, you know, like we were talking about Yorgos Lanthimos. I like Dogtooth. I like The Lobster. And I know that a lot of people can't get behind that. I'm trying to think. I was trying to think of some other artsy-ish movies that I don't know, like Waking Life or like with Linklater or something. There's things that it's hard to think of it on the spot, but there's just certain movies, tonalities, structural choices that will clearly affect or alienate your audience, right? This one isn't even that crazy. I just don't like the pacing. I just don't like the vibe. I don't know. They're great actors. I mean, Jesse Buckley, great actor. Paul Mescal, great actor. Kind of maybe is crying too in too many movies, though, to be fair. It's like this ongoing joke. Emily Watson's in there, and she's something. No, I'm kidding. She's always a great actress. But it's just, I don't know. I got about 1 hour into it, which, let me see. So there was another hour five, right? I got about an hour into it, and I was like, I just can't do this. I hate that I'm getting to a point where I just can't... If I was in the cinema, look, all of the films I'm talking about that I left, like, I mean, F1, I turned off. Oh, my God, I didn't get to Sinners. Oh my God, that was the big bang. Okay. I'll wrap up with Hamnet. Hamnet, for me, just too boring. I just didn't care. Like, you know, Agnes, she's like giving birth in the forest. She's like rubbing like witchcraft powder on her hand. She's like such a red flag. Old Billy Shakespeare over here, he's such a pushover. I mean, I guess that it's just like, I just don't care. I don't care. Right? And time would jump crazily. They'd be like, oh, father, we're falling in love. You'll never get my approval. Well, you're going to have a grandson. And then it would be like, smash cut. She's 9 months pregnant. I'm like, no card, no title card, like 9 months later. And then to just be like her giving birth. Also, this is a continuity thing for me. There was like two births that I saw before I left the movie. I don't know how many kids they had, but like there was two births, and it's just like one of them is just her like screaming in the woods, and then someone comes up and like goes like, it's a baby boy, and then picks up that baby, walks off. I'm like, hello, umbilical cord though? Did it just like pop off? Like no mention of an umbilical cord? She just... farted a baby out in the woods, dude. Like, what are we doing here? Not thinking about like an umbilical cord. And then later, she gets on all fours and squats another one out. Sorry, mom, for the language, but it's just like, it's ridiculous how they show this. She like toots another one out. Again, she's like, I'll take the baby to the other room. And she's like, let me hold my baby. No umbilical cord. Anyway, I'm getting nitpicky. Let's get to the real meat here, boys and girls, which is I didn't like Sinners. Shouldn't do that. Sorry. I'm sorry. And that's the thing, too. It's like, it's the most nominated movie of all time. It's the most Oscar-nominated movie in the history of the Academy Awards ever. How was that? Like, how though? Like, it's fine. It's just okay. And it riles me up the same way that like The Substance did, where it's like, if I say I thought that the message of The Substance is an important, interesting message about how women are portrayed in media and how they are sort of pushed into the narrative that they have to retain their youth in order to progress in an ever-changing industry, and that their bodies become more of the focus than their intent or their talent. But this was a very boring and surface-level way of showing it. Then they're like, you're sexist, dude. You just didn't get it, you misogynist pig. And I'm like, I just said that that kind of story is very important. I can list like 30 movies that talk about that topic in a much deeper, more nuanced way that's about like humanity as opposed to like, but like, what if I injected myself with like squirt juice and then I was just pretty again? Like, yeah, I guess you could do that. That's also like a freshman. It's also just like a student film idea. Anyway, this is Sinners is not that bad. I should make that really crystal clear. Sinners is not like that bad, but it's cliche. I'm sorry. It's categorized as an American horror film, but it's cheesy. It's just cheesy. And it's, I don't know. I mean, like, they should get nominated certainly for VFX and for innovation with cinematography. Absolutely. There's so many, like, I'm going to say all the things I like. Look, they're very innovative with how they made the Michael B. Jordan as twins. Super innovative things, how they were able to like hug and like one could light the other cigarette, and how they had this crazy rigged camera that looked like 10 GoPros that he would put on like football shoulder pads. All that stuff is really innovative and cool. And I do think that, you know, Ryan Coogler, it's not as if like I can't wait to watch his movies, but I think he's an important voice. And I like that he's always worked with Michael B. Jordan. I like Fruitvale Station. That's a cool debut film that did well. And I think it's a really interesting movie. But there's something about Sinners that for me just feels like it's almost like it's just in the zeitgeist to be like the thing. And it feels very forced to me. For me, Sinners, it's like, okay, you're twins and you're in, you know, the Delta in the 1930s and you want to open up, you know, a club, so to say, like a, you know, like a, I mean, yeah, it's a club, basically. It's just like, you know, an old barn that has like drinks and you dance and live music. That's cool. That's great. And the music's good. You know, of course, it's great. It's great musicians. And then, you know, when you start getting into like, oh, all of the white people in the Delta are literally vampires, that's where it's like, okay. I mean, I get the message for sure. There was gross behavior and still is to this day. And there should be films talking about that. Racism should be absolutely artistically expressed and reminding people of how horrible behaviors of anybody is. Or like there should art and film and music and culture should always reflect. It should always be a mirror reflecting back to the main, like it should always reflect back to society exactly what they've grown numb to so that they don't repeat bad behaviors. In the same way of how I do think it's important too, that like Germans are so often, you know, reminded in thorough detail in school about the Holocaust, because that is behavior that needs to be like focused on, never forgotten, reminded of, you know, there's such an important thing to that. And like Trevor Noah has a really, really great stand-up bit that's more philosophy than comedy, actually. But it's a great thing about how it's so strange that American history books want to just remove the chapter about slavery. And that's a real thing that is happening. And it's like, well, why would you just get rid of that? Because it's unpleasant. If you get rid of history and you don't face it and look at it, you're bound to repeat it. It's just the most obvious rule of thumb. So I think, you know, the general story, this got much deeper than I thought it would get. Basically, Sinners reminds me of The Substance in the sense that the message they're giving is just so surface level. Your oppressed, struggling, southern-dwelling African-American men in a world run by literally vampiric white racists who try to take down your livelihood and threaten your safety and try to, you know, take over your creative expression. I just don't think they did anything that interesting. They say it's a horror film. Not for a frame of this movie is it scary. It's cartoonish. The vampires look like the vampires from the Wesley Snipes Blade movies. You know, Haley Steinfeld. I don't know. She's just like some hot white girl. All the dialogue. This is tough for me to say because it's not my place to say if this feels authentic or not to the African American community. But from someone who's from Mississippi, literally, when I know so many people that like have this draw, but when I see dialogue, some of the dialogue in this movie, of course I can't speak for Black culture, but like, and I wouldn't to be crystal clear, but there's some dialogue that you can tell is dialogue written by people who watched movies of over-the-top dialogue, as opposed to, in my opinion, like, being there. You know, like, for example, and I'll stop with this because this is getting nitpicky, but like, if I were to do an impression of my mom, and mom, this is not in any way meant to be, let's not even just say mom. It's just like someone that I grew up with, right? Someone from my school or something. There's a Mississippi sound. There's like this, like, well, I'm Southern, so I'm going to try and read the plot from this. So it's like, trying to leave their troubled lives behind, twin brothers return to their Mississippi hometown, start again, only discover that an even greater evil's waiting to welcome them back. You know, yeah, I mumbled there and stuff, but it's just that trying to leave their troubled lives behind. There's this thing where Hollywood Californian people do a Mississippi thing, and they're like, trying to leave their troubled lives behind. Twin brothers return to their Mississippi hometown to start again, only to discover that an even greater evil is waiting to welcome them back. And I'm like, that's how Blanche sounds in Golden Girls. Like, what are we doing? Why is there no accent that's like, all right, y'all, well, like, trying to leave their troubled lives behind, twin brothers turn to their Mississippi hometown and start again. Like, Oh Brother, Where Art Thou had incredible accents. And that's just the first, like, you know, Southern movie that came to mind. There's a lot. Fried Green Tomatoes. Shit, there's so many good ones. Yeah, anyway, whatever. There's a lot of really great movies that take place in the South that actually just get it. The Help has great Southern accents. But this is just like, well, we're in the Delta, and we better watch out for them. They are vampires. And I'm like, what are we doing? And except for, it's nominated more than Lord of the Rings. It's nominated more than, like, Training Day or Titanic or, I don't know, so many great movies. But anyway, that's my piece on that. I think the one little note I had at the beginning that I wanted to mention is, well, you know what? I've talked enough about movies. I'm going to leave that for another day because it's kind of really random now that I think about it. But here are some updates for everybody. So I would love if, I'm going to put the link in the show notes, but guys, the episode from 1 or 2 weeks ago, the one that's titled YouTube Special. YouTube Special, Why Do Germans Love Tatort? Please, if you have not seen the YouTube video of that episode, it would mean the world to me for you to go to the link in my bio or like in the show notes here and watch that. It's short. It's just over 10 minutes, much shorter than this. And, you know, I put a lot of work into the editing. I put a lot of work into putting, like, images and overlays and making it fun to watch. You can put it on while you do laundry or, you know, while you vacuum or something. But it really helps me. It really, you know, I'm trying to grow the YouTube channel. I'm trying to expand that, and watching it's free. If you can subscribe there, that really helps me, clicking that notification bell. I know it sounds cheesy. Every YouTuber says that, but like, I'm really trying to grow that because I can actually, if I grow that, this audience into the YouTube audience, then I can actually make income from views because my Instagram views don't make any money and TikTok's very hard because you can only make money if you have a video not only over 60 seconds, but it has to do very, very, very well. Which most videos don't for a lot of people. Because there's just so much stuff. But YouTube's a great way to, like, organically make some sort of passive income by making the content. And I worked really hard on that video. So please, again, if you've not gone to the YouTube special, Why Do Germans Love Tatort? It's on my YouTube. The link is in the show notes. So please, again, watch it, subscribe, hit that notification bell. It really, really, really helps me get pushed into the algorithm. And, yeah, helps new people find stuff I do. So please go do that. And, yeah. In the comments of that video, if you wanted to let me know what you think your go-to pick is for the, let me know in the comments of that video what you think the go-to win will be for the 2026 Oscars. My best picture guess is going to be one battle after another, but I feel like Sinners is going to sweep this year's Oscars. Who knows what's going to happen with Marty Supreme, Train Dream, Secret Agent. I don't know why F1's there for Best Picture. Hamnet, maybe Jessie Buckley's going to win for Best Actress. Sentimental Value, I don't know. So it's a tough year. It's a weird year for Oscars, in my opinion. Definitely not as, like, back-to-back-to-back, just great movies that I enjoyed as much as last year. But I was biased. So, yeah, do all that. Thank you so much for being here. Love you guys and hope you have a great week. And let me know next week if you watched the Oscars and if your bets worked out. Have a great week. Bye-bye. Look out, baby. The Saints are coming through. And it's all over now. Baby blue. Artsy Fartsy Immigrants, ein Podcast von John Prinz und Moritz Batscheider, produziert für M94.5.